It is just about 2 minutes after 4 o'clock here at KPFK, 90.7 FM, Los Angeles, 98.7 FM, Santa Barbara, worldwide at kpfk.org. It's once again time for Melting Pot here every Sunday from 4 to 6 p.m. My name is Michael Barnes. I'm your host for this program. And on today's show, we have a bit of a treat for you guys. Robin Hannibal, who is in a bunch of different projects at the moment. He is maybe best known for being part of the duo Quadron. He is also this year kind of spread his wings further with the group Rye, and also under his own name, producing music as Bobby and probably a wide variety of other things too. So he's our guest in the studio today. This first hour, we're going to do an interview with him and play you some music from his various projects. And then in the second hour, we have an extra special treat where he's going to kind of give us a bit of a guest DJ set. So that's what's coming in today's show. We also have tickets for the Culture Collide Festival, which Robin's group Rye is going to be performing at, in addition to, it seems like, every group in the world over several days this coming weekend. And so stay tuned for that. But first, wanted to start off this set just for those of you who haven't heard Robin's music with any of these bands, to make sure we're all on the same page. And play you some music right now, which was actually recorded here at KPFK in 2010 when Robin and Coco of Quadron came in and performed a very different version of their song Simile Life, which is what you're going to hear right now on KPFK and Melting Pot.
Simply Life. it's a death-defying drive. I break the glass, I keep the score. Attack the halls and corridors. I work at night, I work the night. I work the long and night.
Du kan ha dag av Triple time, a dark rhythm beating just behind. Expose a subtle reward
across your face.
Your face. All lace your thighs with beautiful lies. Kidnap your mind, I'll help you find a gentle pain runs through your veins.
Body's a world, so fascinating, you're not alive. be tender, be strong. Befriend me, belong. Be gone by dusk, but just be around. Be untold, be young. Behold, be unsung. Just picking with me before you win day.
Stay, don't close your eyes.
Music from the group Rye here at KPFK and Melting Pot. That comes from their debut full-length release, which is entitled Woman. The name of the song was Open. Also in the set, you heard music from Quadrant from their latest release, Avalanche. The song was Befriend. Another track from Rye, Major Minor Love, also from Woman. Music from Boomclap Bachelors from an EP that came out a couple years ago on Plug Research. Also some music from Owasu and Hannibal from many moons ago. The record Living with Owasu and Hannibal, Blue Jay, the name of the song. Music from the man himself, Robin Hannibal, as I guess in some ways his alter ego, Bobby, from the Bobby EP from a couple years ago, Sneak Preview, the name of the track. And start things off with music recorded here in our studios in 2010. Simile Life, the name of the track, featuring Coco of Quadrant on the vocals and production work from Robin Hannibal, who is our guest here in the studio. How are you doing, Robin?
Good. Thanks for having me.
It was a pleasure the first time around, and it's, you know, just as much of a pleasure this time around, especially just because you've been really, really busy.
Yeah.
Since the last time we saw you, and from what I remember, back in 2010, you'd kind of moved to Los Angeles, but I don't think you were living here permanently. But that has definitely changed.
Definitely, yeah. I think that was around the time that I moved. I think maybe we were here on some sort of promotional trip,
maybe
in start 2010, and then late 2010 I actually moved here. Yeah, I've been living here ever since.
How has that affected the way you put your music together, the way you create music? I would imagine being here as opposed to being back in Denmark has to have an influence on you.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I mean, it's had a great influence, and also it's had a great effect as well. I think that the music that I'm into and that I primarily create and compose and produce isn't a very Scandinavian sound. it's developed more and more, and yeah, there's a market for it now.
Yeah,
but at the time of me moving here and things slowly building in the States, that was definitely not the case. So that helped tremendously, finding like a base, mm-hmm, finding a core of listeners that understood what it is that I and the different projects that I'm included in wanted to do, mm-hmm, and wanted to achieve. And I think it's just, you know, no matter what it is that you do, getting the feeling that there is some kind of feedback, positive feedback, and that people can use it, definitely encourages you and influences you to wanna, you know, step it up and do it even more and get even more busy, and that's, I think that's predominantly the biggest difference between, mm-hmm, living in Denmark and living here. And then, you know, also the musical DNA is different here too. The way that people listen to music, the way that they're much more, you know, positive and enthusiastic about music, it's very different. And then also, you know, soul music, which is, I'd say, like the base from where I distract a lot of influences and a lot of production and, uh-huh, and writing, is, you know, it's just one of those genres that everybody can relate to here, and that everybody, you know, loves somehow or has some kind of involvement or, mm-hmm, relation to.
Yeah,
and that's not the same in Scandinavia or, mm-hmm, even Europe. Mm-hmm. You know, there's definitely people that are into it, but
yeah, but it's more like little pockets.
Yep. And that's very different. So here you don't feel that disconnect, you know, if you mention that you do this and this and that, or, you know, where I'm from, very often you come in and you play your music and or you go to meetings and, you know, whatever, all the industry stuff, and they look a little bit down upon soul music still, you, mm-hmm, know, as something that we can't really do, and, you know, that's from the other side of the Atlantic.
That's not our music.
Yeah,
or
it's a little
like that,
bit of hands off, yeah, you know. So that's changed. And then I think also what's just amazing about America is that because it's such a young country, everybody is not from here.
Mm.
You know, everybody moved here. Everybody is trying to make it. So there's a different respect from people not coming from here.
Yeah.
Like people don't really care that much.
Mm.
Like they care about, you know, the elements, and they care about the material, the core of what it is that you do. So that's great. You know, you don't feel, oh, you're from Denmark. You make soul influenced music.
Mm.
It's not looked down upon at all. You know, it's like, wow, oh, that's really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's almost, you know, exotic.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that that's maybe especially the kind of dynamic that you were talking about. It's especially true of Los Angeles, where there's certainly a lot of people who are native Angelenos, but Los Angeles, because of its size, because of everything that's here, and especially musically speaking, you know, it has this kind of gravitational pull from all kinds of different areas. And a lot of what you were saying in terms of the effect of Los Angeles seemed to be connected to being able to find audiences, and especially people, places to play the music, to hear the music. I was also wondering just how it's been kind of coming into community of musicians in Los Angeles as well.
It's been amazing. Yeah, it really has been. And you know, I feel like from day one, they really just welcomed us. And I remember very vividly some of the very first shows that, I mean, they weren't really shows. They were just basically, you know, me on a laptop playing off the tracks and then Coco singing to it, because we weren't prepared. Like, we thought we were just going to come over and say hi, you know, and all of a sudden it was expected for us to, like, do a, you know, an hour-long performance of some sort. You know, we couldn't even afford getting a band over. And people just came to us, and these great, you know, musicians and producers, songwriters, people in the, you know, in the music, you know, business or industry or whatever, they were very, very open and very, you know, very encouraging and yeah, just really nice and just welcomed us, you know, and let us in. And I think that's a really, really great aspect of the Los Angeles music scene as well, is that you know, you're greeted with open arms.
Yeah.
There's just not the same, you know, there's not the same, I mean, I guess there's a competition, but there's not the same, you know, elbow type of thing that you sometimes see in other cities.
Okay.
You know, you it's very much a share.
Yeah.
Sharing is caring type of thing, and that was really great to experience as well. So I mean, the first trip we were, you know, we even stayed with some different, you know, DJs and radio DJs and label people and, you know, musicians, and it was great. And some of them we still have, and I still have contact with to this day.
In some ways, kind of, you know, and this was one of the things we talked about when you and Coco were here in 2010, like the kind of story of Quadrant and how people found the music is, you know, almost kind of like the like perfect kind of fairy tale for indie musicians.
Totally.
And in some ways, just because the circumstances are certainly different, but in some ways I almost feel like lightning kind of struck twice with the project Rye. And so could you talk a little bit, especially about where you, or how you hooked up with Mike Malosh, who does the vocals?
Yeah. Well, it's a crazy story actually, because with Mike, I hadn't known of his music for many years. And a funny little, you know, side note to one of the songs you played or projects, Boom Clap Bachelors,
mm-hmm.
that project was actually very inspired by some of Mike's first albums, because he's been releasing music for, I think, around 8 to 10 years.
Okay.
You know, so he's definitely not new to it. And it was very inspiring to hear somebody who was, you know, also not American, he's Canadian,
mm-hmm.
but he has a very, like, European sensibility. He's lived all over Europe. And he mixed, you know, what was kind of happening in Europe, like this, you know, European electronics, and mixed it with this kind of soulful vocals without it trying to sound, you know, like R&B, you know, like he just kind of distilled a few elements of it, like the emotional quality and the honesty and the sincerity, and he mixed it with, you know, modern music and modern programming. So that was really inspiring, and he was actually releasing music on all of his solo albums was on the same label as Quadron, Plug Research. And the first time we were over here, the owner of Plug Research, he, you know, he was playing it to us. I knew it, and Coco hadn't heard about it before, and you know, so we started listening to it in the car and stuff, and he started saying, well, it would be really interesting if you guys did something together, and then that kind of led to him being offered to remix one of the Quadron songs, and he then made a remix for it, and he had sung on top of it as well. He had done some background vocals. And I asked him, you know, if he could send over maybe the background vocals as well, because I really liked those. They gave me an idea for another song. So the start of the project was actually me remixing the remix, which I guess is also very modern. But yeah, so, you know, he just called me up. I remember one time out of the blue, and we just started to talk. And I think he was kind of ready to try something new as well. He had been making everything on his own for 10 years. Very self-contained in every sense. And he was living in Berlin. I was living in Copenhagen at that time. And, you know, I told him about this idea I had of this song that he had remixed, and I'd made something new out of it. And he said, well, why don't I just come up to Copenhagen for a week and, you know, we'll see what happens. And I had a studio in Copenhagen fully equipped with, you know, drums, piano, and whatnot, and mixing desk and everything. And so he just came up, and we just, you know, just had fun for a week and just hung out and wrote songs. And that's actually where 3 of the 10 songs came from, from that week. And then it just developed from there. I think it stood still maybe for 8 or 9 months because I moved to the States. I moved to LA, and he was still living in Berlin. And then there was just one day where this new label, Innovative Leisure, they used to work at Stone's Throw, but they made this new label, and they asked me if I had any, you know, music that, you know, that I was really excited about. And I kept mentioning this one thing, this other thing, and this other thing, and they were all like, oh, yeah, that sounds exciting, that sounds exciting. I'm like, oh, and actually, you know, I started working with Mike Milosz, and I'm like, oh! And they just like they just flipped. I noticed, like, they, you know, they just had small lights in their eyes, and it turned out that they were huge fans of Milosz's music, but always felt that it'd be interesting to hear it in another setup, you know, or him working with somebody else. So it was just kind of it again. It just happened very organically, you know. It wasn't really forced upon anybody, or you know, we weren't trying to, you know, make it happen this and this and this way. It just sort of happened, and they went back and they heard these demos, and they were just into it, and they you know, provided a budget and everything, and for Mike to start flying over. And then he met a woman in LA and I had a girlfriend at that time as well, and so the whole, you know, the whole inspiration was also very much this newfound love, and that's also why the album is called Woman, because it's an ode or homage to women and the feeling of this, you know, newfound love.
It's one of the things that's interesting about the record and about the reception of the record, and a lot of it has to do with his voice, but also I think with the production, how everything kind of flows together. It kind of adds to this kind of deep tenderness that's in virtually every song. I'm trying to think of all the lyrics of the songs in my head. even regardless of some of the lyrical content, at times there's like really deep tenderness to it. And in some cases, I know for some reviewers, some listeners, they've actually feel like they've kind of been fooled, because Mike has this this very particular voice. And like for me, growing up as a fan of Little Jimmy Scott, who also that same kind of voice where it's just like it's an otherworldly voice, and it's not the voice you expect to come out of the person who is singing. And so a lot of people felt like this was a woman artist. This is part of the, you know, and I've wondered what that kind of experience has been like for the two of you, because there's been a little, at least early in the year, there was a little bit of mystery kind of connected to Rai.
Yeah.
And so I was wondering just how that worked for you.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's been an advantage, and then I think at a certain point it also became not a disadvantage, but it's just it became an old story, you know, for us to tell. But I think in many ways it also helped not sell the project, but you know, if you look at most projects, there's always something that makes it, you know, stand out a tiny bit, you know, or it needs a story, you know. Even Jimmy Scott, as you mentioned, which I'm a huge fan of, you know, he kind of transcends genders with his voice and how he looks and everything, and that is very much the case, I think, if you go back also and look at a lot of the interesting artists over the years, famous and non-famous. So it definitely helped in many ways, and we were aware of it to a certain extent. I mean, I've always known that Mike was a guy, so to me it wasn't really so much of a surprise, but it was something that we were talking about when we were making it, that we wanted it to be faceless, because we were both making projects on the side as well, you know. That was kind of our, you know, main income.
Yeah.
So we didn't want people to already have a preconceived idea of what it would sound like. Or it'd be like, oh, it's that guy, and oh, it's that guy from blah 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 blah. So it's gonna sound like this. So that was the main reason. And then it just so happened that a lot of people think that he, you know, sounds like a girl, or like he could sound like a girl, but it wasn't ever something that I think he's probably heard it over the years.
I would imagine so too,
but it wasn't something that we tried to make into like a PR story, but we definitely wanted to add some mystery, because I think we both feel that in this day and age it's all about, you know, like mass exposing everything, thing you do, that it can be really nice sometimes to not tell the whole story and let people fantasize and you know, imagine, like use their imagination and not get everything force-fed in front of them, you know. And that was the concept behind it.
Yeah.
And then because, you know, these were love songs, then we opted to call it Woman. And also we wanted a name that could mean a lot of different things. It could be a female name, it could be a male name, it could, you know, it's also, you know, a product, it could be a lot of different things. So that's where it came from. And then, you know, it gets to a point sometimes where you can't really control what's going on, you know. And it became this, you know, why don't they want to tell us who we are? And then, you know, like I think the first songs we had on iTunes, it said our names. It's like Rai is Robin Hannibal, Mike Milos. Like it was never really hard to actually find.
Yeah.
But it became this great web story or internet story that we didn't want people to know who we were. But we never really did. We didn't use any energy on, you know, telling everybody who we were. Yeah. Which I think is probably what made it feel like that, you know. But at least to me, there's a big difference between, you know, shouting it on the rooftops of LA and then just, you know, just keeping it, you know, letting it kind of happen by itself, like letting it take its life of its own.
Yeah, and it's a fairly rare thing these days to have that happen, especially, I mean, with the digital age that we live in. It's very, very easy for people to kind of figure things out and find things out. And I think that's one of the, you know, I'd kind of wondered, having not spoken with you too much, and I a lot of times I try and stay away from interviews that other people do.
Yeah.
But I'd known that when the group had performed live, that a lot of instances that done without much of the house lights on the band and kind of de-emphasizing that, and the focus then had to be on the music itself and more of the listener and what the listener takes away from the music.
Totally. I mean, that's the whole concept of it. And it's not meant to be this, big philosophical reaction of some sort. I mean, it's not a dogma, but it's definitely just, it just felt right, you know, because we did make the whole album together. Mm. You know, it wasn't an internet thing, or it wasn't beats that, you know, mics jammed on top of. We sat in that room and we made everything together. Mm. You know, we wrote everything together. We made all the music together. So it didn't feel like it should have... I mean, either it should have our faces on everything, or it shouldn't.
Yeah.
So we just opted for the latter. And I think, you know... I think it actually makes the music more sensual and more romantic when you don't have a guy or two guys standing there trying to look cool, and I have total respect for people that does that. It's not that. I just didn't think, and we didn't think, that it really matched this music and this album.
Yeah. Let's hear a little bit from this album, from the record From Rye. The name of the album is Woman. The song we're going to listen to right now is The Fall on KPFK and Melting Pot.
Love to me.
Music from the group Rye here on KPFK and Melting Pot. The name of the song, The Fall, and featured on the record Woman from that group. Robin Hannibal does the production work for, or much of the production work for that group, in addition to a few others, and he is our guest here in the studio. I was wondering if we could talk a little bit about the production, you know, putting together this music for this particular group, and especially thinking about the kind of differences and similarities, I guess you could say, between the work that you do in Rye and the work in Quadrant.
Sure.
And I guess the first part of thinking about this was how you keep these things separate.
Yeah.
Because a lot of times, you know, artists have, especially producer, and I sometimes feel a little weird just calling you a producer, which we can talk about later
yeah,
on.
Yeah.
But, you know, producers kind of have like a sound or an aesthetic.
Sure.
And a lot of times when you, that's part of the, you know, being a producer and having a name is your name is attached to it and it has that particular kind of sound. And there are some elements certainly that are shared between these two kind of most prominent groups that you're working with, but there are also some fairly stark differences. And so could you say a little bit of something about that, just kind of keeping the differences between Rye and Quadrant?
Yeah, I mean, the main difference is obviously that Quadrant, it's a girl singing named Coco, and with Rye, it's a guy called Mike that is singing. And both projects kind of have the same setup where it's me and a singer, and we write the songs together, and then, you know, I produce it, and they have an influence on the production as well, to a point in what they want, like, or to a level of how much they want to be involved. Sometimes, you know, it's a little bit. Sometimes it's more. Sometimes they're vocal about things. Sometimes they're not. I mean, I guess what makes my situation sometimes a little bit confusing is, or, you know, knowing or not figure, not knowing what to exactly call me or define me as, is that I am both a producer and a songwriter. And that's, I think that's the main difference, where, you know, most producers are producers and most songwriters are songwriters.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also because I came from the independent world of music and slowly slipped into, I guess, what you can call somehow the mainstream or the bigger version of the music business. And in that, it's more often that the different, types of work are divided. You know, so there's a producer, there's a songwriter, there's a top line writer. You know, there's maybe even somebody that just does the lyric, somebody that engineers, somebody that mixes, somebody that does arrangement.
Mm-hmm.
It just so happens I do all of those things.
Yeah.
And it's been more just because there wasn't the budget to have all these different people. So I took on all these different people. The only thing I don't do is play live. And it's simply just because I do all these things, I don't have time to practice one instrument.
Mm.
B, my interests lie in this field. Like, that's who I am, like, that's what I'm capable and really good at doing. And that again makes it even more complicated, because in both Ryan Quadrant I'm the artist as well.
Yeah.
And that happened because, again, I came from this independent music world where there isn't enough money to pay a producer to make your album. So, and because I'm also writing the songs or co-writing the songs and actually creating the music, not just producing it, I'm actually also involved in the artistic expression of it.
Yeah.
And also down to the level of the music videos, the art, the name of the bands, you know, everything, the administrative part of it, all of that. So it's something that was necessary at the point, but definitely now sometimes can be a bit of a hassle to try and explain, because, you know, here or you know, in the mainstream music business thing, you're either, you know, an artist or you're a producer.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm a little bit of both.
Yeah.
But I actually always wanted to be a producer and a songwriter, mainly. It just, there wasn't, you know, there wasn't the surroundings for it. So I kind of had to jump on the other wagon as well. And that is also why Rye, in many ways, is a little bit like faceless and nameless to a certain extent, because, you know, I'm not so interested in the whole, you know, being, you know, a celebrity. And also with Quadrant, Coco is definitely, you know, the one that mm-hmm. is mostly exposed
upfront,
and
yeah.
upfront, you know, and it's also something that we agreed on, and we even wanted to do more, but because I'm also an artist, signed as an artist, and we're a duo, then, you know, it's a part of it as well. And I know that, and I don't shy away from it when it's necessary. Mm-hmm. I understand that, but, you know, it's a little tricky.
A lot of room for musical schizophrenia.
Yes.
And just in especially, I guess, now that you have these, and you know, this year,
yeah.
you know, the Rye record, I guess the record was finished in 2012.
Yeah.
But really caught on at the beginning of this year, and
yeah.
I think got picked up by Sony at the beginning of this year.
Polydor.
Okay. And the Quadrant record came out on Vestin Culture, which is kind of a subsidiary of Sony.
Yes.
And so both of these albums come out, one in the earlier year, one in the summer, but both of them kind of prominent here in the same year.
Yeah.
And thinking about just the kind of process of making music, so now that they're both like these seem like part-time projects that are really full-time projects, when music comes to you now, does it come kind of with the particular voices attached to it, or do the musical ideas just kind of come out and then you kind of figure out where they're going to go later on?
Yeah, I mean, it's almost a two-part question, and the first part of it, like you're saying, with the Rye record coming out in March and the Quadrant record coming out in June, with 3 months in between, which mm-hmm. isn't a lot, because
yeah.
normally you do press and stuff for half a year after the album comes out.
Yeah.
So I kind of got caught in, you know, like yeah. a double whirlwind. And, you know, when I tell people about this in the industry as well, they're like, you are signed two different places, you have two different acts and you're releasing them at the same time, are you insane? And it was definitely not the plan, because the Rye album, like you said, was actually finished a year before it was released. And the Quadrant album wasn't, it didn't have a release date, and then all of a sudden it had one, you know, and then there was like, you know, having to like finish it up and move on it. So everything just coincided, and it wasn't planned in any way. And in the midst of it, the odds of that happening looked very, very slim, you know. Everybody involved, it looked very, very slim. And then there was a teeny bit of time where it was a little bit intense, because there was certain days where, you know, I could be two different places, you know, and then it, you know, you have to figure out how to get around that. But it wasn't for more maybe than a couple of weeks, and then actually, you know, it worked out just fine. And then what it also showed was that they helped each other, you know, the projects, because they are in the same world, but I guess in two different categories as well. One of them is, like, you know, then that's leading into your second question, is that, you know, Coco has a different voice. She's a woman. Mike has a different voice. He, you know, he's a guy as well. And the aesthetic is somewhat a little bit different also. So I very quickly know when I'm working on something what it will fit for, or I have an idea. And sometimes, you know, sometimes one of them don't like it, and I'll play it to the other one and they like it, and then, you know, then we go, you know, and that's just how it is. And then other times there'll be something that I'll have lying around for years and years and years, and then I take it out and I'm like, that's actually that could be a pretty cool song. And then I'll use some of it, you know. And the great thing is, you know, if you write based on more the music than instead of the production, then you can always change things around. You can always take something or an idea from an old demo or idea composition and gel it with something else, because it's, you know, it's just chords, it's just, you know, melodies, and you can always transpose them and fix them and make them work together.
And
in that way it's actually not that complicated or not that difficult. It's sometimes me that makes it more difficult, because I have all these different, you know, options.
Yeah.
But it's a
that's a good problem.
It's a luxurious problem, definitely.
Yeah.